This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 922, brought to you by iFanboy listeners like you. Hey, I'm Josh Flanagan. I am the current and only host of the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. I don't know what Connor's deal is. Connor, my regular co-host, he's all over the place, and we have to question those priorities. Nah, there's a lot of things going on, and here we are. It's just me. When I say we, I mean you and me. There's nobody else here. There is only us, sir. We're doing a little special show today. So I'll be doing a solo show. I do this, no more than once a year. It makes me very tired after I'm done talking. The way this normally works is myself and another person, or another person and a third person come together. They talk about the books of the week. Someone picks the best book. We call that the pick of the week. They will talk about other comics from the week. There's a patron pick in which the people listening, the patrons, special kinds of listeners, pick a book that they want us to talk about. There'll be listener mail. There's a patron power. It should be a really good time. There will be spoilers. We will talk about what happens in the comic books. I said we, because I really am used to having help here, but there we are. It's the middle of the day. I'm not used to doing this by myself. If you've heard these before, it can go in various directions, but I do know that I have to talk for an hour straight, which you would think it would be a thing that I would really enjoy. But for some reason, I'm finding it daunting right now. Anyway, spoilers are coming this week. You guessed it. I, Josh Flanagan, had the pick. And the pick of the week is Usagi Yojimbo, The Crow, number one, or episode 275, if you were counting in a straight line, which comics finds distasteful these days. If you are a follower of me on my Instagram account, you'll find that I don't really post all that much. But when I do, this week I posted that I've been reading the Usagi Yojimbo Saga, I think it is. It's a volume from Dark Horse. It collects the first chunk of issues that they did there, which were not the original issues that were self-published, sort of starting in the 80s. But when he went to Dark Horse, Stan Sakai went to Dark Horse and started doing stories. Anyway, I've been really into that, and I had posted about the fact that I'm just loving Usagi Yojimbo lately. And there are new stories. They are coming out from Dark Horse now. They were coming out from IDW for a while. I believe there are other publishers along the way. The stories today are colored. There was a little while where there was reprinted stories that were then colored, while at the same time there were new stories. But this one is The Crow Part 1, again, number 275 in a series. No one asked, and I'm going to go for it, though. I think there's a benefit to both the color and the black and white. If I had to pick one, I would go with the color, but I do think that the color that gets put in here by Hi-Fi Color in this instance, it lends something. It lends sort of the color of the sort of the different samurai kimono and stuff that they have, and it gives gives things, just a view that you didn't maybe get through the black and white stuff. That said, I really do love the black and white stuff. But at the end of the day, it's a great comic book, and I don't really care how it's presented to me because I get to keep reading new stories 40-something years later, which is amazing. So we have our new story here, and Usagi is walking around because that's what he does, going from place to place. And I don't know who this other rabbit that he's with is. He's with another rabbit who's a young, I guess, a samurai apprentice. He's in training. They're going through the woods and they see some folks attacking a guy. I want to say guy because they're all animals and he's a dog cat kind of thing. I can't exactly tell what he is. I think it's a cat. I don't know. Some sort of rodent. Doesn't really matter. The animals don't really matter all that much in this, even though everybody's an animal. And they think they're doing the right thing and they knock the attackers away and they run and the guy that they helped, he was a bad guy. And the other guys going after him were after a bounty, and they go to a nearby town and they find out that like everybody's after this guy and nobody can catch him. And they had him, and much like Sean Connery and The Cure for Cancer, they lost him. And so they feel bad. There's this really interesting bit that happens in here where the young samurai is really offended about bounty hunting. And he puts up a big, like, no true samurai would stoop to this level. It's like his old friend Jen is here, who's a rhino. And, if you've read it, he shows up over the years and he's a little, him and Usagi have worked together a lot. They seem to be chums more or less. But Jen is coming from more of a, we'll say like a Han Solo direction. Like he's out there, he's got to earn a dollar. He's not so much concerned about the honor and the whatever, you know. And so as I'm trying to talk, because there's nobody else, I can't look for this character's name, but he's the rabbit in yellow. There's this whole thing where he's trying to learn about the world and honor and what you should, who you should be offended by and what's right. And this is all through the lens of sort of this era of Japanese history, which is sort of made up. But if we know anything else about reading this book for a long time, it is, it's also, it's striving to be sort of based on history. And so these customs and mores and, in a way the samurai in this could be looked at as, as a type of a fundamentalist. I can't figure out the magic combination of being able to define what is good about this and why furry, cute animals walking around as humans telling adventure and morality tales and magic stories. I don't know why that works. There's a really, really interesting essay in that first volume of the Usagi Saga where James Robinson, comic book writer, Red Star Man, all sorts of other things, he talks about how he loves the book and he's been reading it forever, but initially he'd sort of dismissed it as just another fuzzy furry animal comic book because in the 80s there was a lot of that sort of things. And he sort of hinted on the same thing too, where he couldn't figure out what it was that made this book work as opposed to all the other sort of forgettable, other than like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, there were other books where they would like take a story premise and then they'd put animals in place of the characters. And I'm not going to tell you I have an answer. I'm not going to be like, oh, I figured it out. But I know that I have been puzzling over that exact same question the whole time. For me, there is something, I think, about the simplicity of the stories, about the inherent goodness and wisdom of Usagi Yojimbo as a character. His name is Miyamoto Usagi. Yojimbo is a different word. I don't remember. It's something to do with a wandering samurai kind of thing, Ronin. So it has, there's some level of simplicity and art in there that I find it difficult to isolate. I know that when I was younger, I would read the Yojimbo comics and I didn't understand them. I understood them. I wasn't like, I don't know what's going on here. I understood them, but I know that they were beloved and I know that they've been going on for a very long time, but I didn't really understand why. And I went with it for a while. And then it didn't really pick up. And then at some point, I don't know, it could have been 10 years ago at this point, I just sort of started reading them. And that same thing is like, I just never wanted to stop. And every time you went back in, it was fresh. And you know, to this day, when a new Usagi comic comes out, when I see it on the list, I go, oh, it's usually not pick of the week. It's usually very enjoyable. And it's almost like it's just a special thing for me as a reader to just see the art form get distilled down to these little stories that are so expertly crafted and drawn. And there's no fat there. And I don't know, there is something really pure about them. I guess that's where I'm getting. There's a purity to it, which I, you know, maybe that has something to do with sort of the samurai Bushido ethic. I don't know. But the aesthetic of it is incredibly appealing to me at this stage of my life and how I sort of look at the comic book form and what I want. You know, this is a new story. If you listen to the show, you've heard this, but you can pretty much start reading this anywhere. And if you've been thinking about it, this is fine. This is a brand new story. You kind of always just end up on the road and some shit happens and Usagi deals with it. And there are other characters come in and out. There is nothing required. You don't even need to know it because you'll figure it out. He had a master. The master was killed. Now he has no master, so he wanders around as a traveling Ronin. You know, he has nothing, so he's got to get food and find places to sleep. And it's been going on since I was a very little child. And it's just wonderful. It's a thing like we're lucky to have that. And now, so here's a special feature that we're going to have, is that I have asked Connor to let me know what he thinks of the books. So I don't have to do this all on my own. So
Usagi Yojimbo 275. Yep.
So he was in favor of that one, as you can tell. So that's a yup on that one. Moving over, we're going to talk on Star Wars number 46. If this has a real number in sequence, I don't know what it is, and I'm not going to find it. Charles Soule has been writing this book for quite a while. I think he wrote it and then didn't, and then maybe went back to writing, or he was writing Darth Vader, and now he's on the main Star Wars book. Longtime listeners or Charles Soule fans will know that prior to him becoming a name in comic books, he was a lawyer, or he would have said attorney. He always said attorney, which I thought was interesting because I guess that's more what it is. But he was very specific about that word, is that he was an attorney. And there have been times in his comic book career where he has brought that in to the stories that he was doing. Most notably, I'm sure that there are others, but most notably, he did a run on She-Hulk with, I think, Javier Rodriguez on art. I don't know. It was beautiful. But I don't know if you know this, Jen Walters, She-Hulk is an attorney, and they would have, you know, court scenes, and he would do them, you know, it'd be fun because he sort of knew what he was talking about. And what we have here in Star Wars 45, is it 45? I wrote 46. It's 45. I'm full of it. Star Wars 45 is the trial of Lando Calrissian. I believe this is the second part. Actually, I think Soule's first Star Wars story was a Lando miniseries, in which you may remember he called his friend Lobot Lo, and myself and Ron, who was on the show at the time, were livid about that. Him more so than me, but basically, like, he's kind of been working with Lando off and on through this whole time. And I've talked about these Star Wars stories on the show, and they exist between the movies. They don't necessarily go to explain stuff, but they do character development in the real world of these characters. So I think here we are in between Empire and Jedi. This whole series may be in there. And Lando, during the whole robot uprising thing that happened before, he had to take extreme measures to save his friend Lo, or Lobot, as you may know him, from being destroyed by the robots. And he went outside of the bounds and rules of what he should have within the rebellion. He regrets nothing. He wanted to save his friend. But they're putting on sort of a military trial for Lando. And he brings in this lady who I think she hates him or whatever, but she's a lawyer, and they're having a space trial in space. And there's all sorts of lawyerly shenanigans and tricks going on, and their perspective and the performance of the woman who is the lawyer. And it's very interesting because, and what does that is that Lando in this, you know, you've got a character who, it's always interesting to me when we watch Star Wars, Lando Calrissian would come in, and he was described as a scoundrel, and he tricked, you know, he made a deal with Darth Vader. You know, the deal's been altered, and then he turned it around and saved his friends. And it was just, you know, there's still time to save Han while he's getting choked by Chewbacca. And this is the Lando that exists after that, but before he helps rescue Han on Tatooine. And it's a character who's kind of struggling to come to terms with who he is. And what's nice about this, because it's a story about heroes, you have to have him a little later along, in that he is trying to do the right thing, or at least he's willing to take responsibility for the things that he did. And so because of that, it actually works in the favor of the story that we kind of know what happens later, is that his relationship with Leia and with Chewbacca is fraught, but it is further along where they trust him to a certain extent. And it is one of the first times that I've seen a story that sort of dealt with the fact of, like, Lando had to make a deal with Darth Vader to save the people of Cloud City. And there's a little bit in this where the lawyer shows the court or whoever his bank statements. I guess they have space bank statements. And it just proves that he had a ton of money. And so therefore, in order to save Cloud City, he didn't need the money. He could have left and left everybody, you know, to fight off Darth Vader or whatever. But the reason they did it was for the people there, is what they're saying. So they're trying to establish that he's a good guy. And it goes back and forth like that. And it's very court procedural and it's almost like overly dramatic, which, you know, I might take issue with, except for the fact that I know that Charles Soule is an attorney. I think it's one of those things, like, I think David E. Kelly was an attorney and you know, then he went and made TV shows about lawyers. And I think that's sort of happening here. Like, he's also a very good fiction writer. So he's able to take those legal concepts and those sort of, it's almost routine if you've ever watched like a legal procedural show. But it's very dramatic and it's very entertaining. And in a Star Wars format, stuck in that sort of corner, a Star Wars corner, if you will, I think it worked really well. And I'm very interested in it. You know, we went from I can't remember the name of the droid story where there was, you know, the droid, he was taking over all the other droids and that was going through all the books for months, you know, and I loved that story across all those books and it was super fun. And it was also like an event where it was pretty easy to keep up with, even if you didn't read everything. And, you know, right into this, and I'm still interested. You know, it ties back into that. But again, you could read this story on its own. You should be able to read any Star Wars story on its own, provided you've seen Star Wars. I think that's helpful. Matabek Buzabekov on art there, doing the fine work of trying to draw these characters without making it look like they're creepy life picture drawings. Pretty good. Don't know the name Matabek Buzabekov, but I do like saying it. I've gotten through it a few times. It's all right. Speaking of drawing things, which is what the whole show, that was a terrible segue there. Alien Black, White and Blood number 3. Boy, we're just all these couple of licensed books in a row, that Marvel have taken over. This is the third issue. Black, White, and Blood number 3. It's a little anthology. The three stories, and then there's the first story is a singular episodic story that's been in everyone, and it's called Utopia Part 3. And the next issue will be the last issue, is Part 4. And then the other two stories are sort of standalone, I don't know, 5, 6, 8 pages, whatever they are. This time we have Cody Ziegler and Claire Rowe on the story, the second story, Gear in the Machine, and then Steve Fox and Tommaso Bianchi on Lucky. Utopia is the idea of a bunch of socialist utopians who take a ship into space to build their perfect world. Turns out that there is an alien on one of the sections of their big ring of a spaceship. And then, like, the first issue was we saw them going, oh, we got to release the soldiers, I guess. And someone got mad, like, there are soldiers. What the hell? And then as we get into this story, then the last issue was, like, the soldiers just blow, you know, they blow it. They botch everything. The aliens take over the entire ship. And now they're down to one section out of how many there were. And there's a is it Replicant? No, that's Blade Runner. I don't know, synthoid? No, it's a synthetic robot person. You've seen Aliens. An alien, there's always like a robot, basically, an android who does something they're not supposed to or is, you know, vaguely creepy. And in this one, it's a great story. I kind of don't want to... Every story, every one of these little, you know, I don't know, 10 pagers maybe, from Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing have been a little self-contained story on its own, but then part of a whole at the same time. At the end of the last story, the synthroid, I think that sounds right. She kills the head of the army, even though, you know, robots aren't supposed to do that one. And as we sort of come forward, like there's only one section of their utopia left. And I told you there'd be spoilers, but everybody's complaining. There's not a lot of hope. So she vents those bastards into space. The last of the Utopians are dead because, you know, they're just kind of annoying. I just like the chutzpah of the whole thing. Second story deals with sort of the business aspect of the Weyland-Yutani model. As far as I can tell, the Weyland-Yutani model is to go out and get as many aliens as they can to try to exploit them for profit, and it goes wrong every time. If I'm any sort of a business finance manager, I'm going to say, you know, I don't know if this program is working out. It's led to thousands and thousands of deaths. As far as I know, they haven't successfully sold the alien to anybody or taken over any worlds, but they have wrecked a lot of terraforming projects. So the board at Weyland-Yutani needs to have a meeting. Anyways, in this one, it's a couple of scientists going, man, I don't know what's going on there, but what can we do? We're just cogs in a machine, and this is going to be crazy. The alien kills them. That's the end of all the stories. And I know we've talked about this series every time. And finally, there's a story about a cute dog, and everybody's killed except the dog, and then some people find the dog. Because comic people love dogs, because they're a solitary people and they have an animal around quite often, because otherwise they'd be so lonely. I may be generalizing a bit here, but everybody loves dogs. I love dogs. Anyway, it's been a great, they've done a couple of Black, White, and Red, I think the other ones are, at Marvel. I want to say they did a Daredevil one that I didn't finish, and they did a zombie one, I think. This has been great. I just love watching people play in these confines of like do an alien story, which is always going to be talking about. It's always going to be the same story. And you can only use these colors, and they're just these little tales, these little, you know, almost like fables, about the evil of corporatism, and man's inhumanity to man and man versus nature, in which we always lose. I'm going back to my like elementary school story education there. Man versus man versus nature. There was something else. Let's void ourselves. Let's not void ourselves. Let's go to Void Rivals number 8 from Skybound Comics. This is, of course, Robert Kirkman and Lorenzo Di Felici with Mateus Lopez on colors. This is where the Energon universe started out. I don't know that we've talked about this in a little, but a couple of things that I would say are noteworthy on it is that, first of all, I've known Robert Kirkman's work for a great while. I'm very familiar with it. And this is like, I don't know, man, he can still do comics, and they're different than the ones that came before them. And I really like that at the end of the day, he turned out to be very good at running a media empire, with one of the most successful shows, you know, in the last decade or more, with Walking Dead, which, you know, is based on one of the most successful comic book series. But he sort of went up to that next level of making TV over comics. I'm not saying TV is better than comics, but there is a larger stage and a larger risk, and there's a lot more money involved, blah, 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 all that stuff. And so to have him still doing comics, like still doing monthly comics and like putting his heart into it as if he was just any other guy sort of doing Image comics is impressive to me. And I like that. I know this is part of the Energon universe, but it also feels, you know, completely separate from that. It's original, exists out there in a universe. It is not a weird concept. It's the most Twilight Zone concept of all, is that there's enemies and they hate each other, but they're exactly the same in any way that actually counts. You know, this was sort of a chase issue. There are two heroes who are both from warring races are escaping. I'm not even sure where they're trying to get to, but they're just sort of on a barren space landscape, or a void, if you will. They're rivals in the void. So you can see how the title makes absolute sense. But they are pursued by what seems to be the lady's brother. I think it's the lady's brother. And he's a badass. He has motorcycle and he has space bow and arrow. And he's got impenetrable armor. And it's really just a big chase and fight. That's what's going on. The character of the talking glove. That I was going to say he. I don't know. Maybe it's a lady glove. Or it could be a non-binary glove. I'm fine with that. Whichever. But I say the guy. The glove guy. That's very entertaining. There's a big fight here. And of course, there is a cliffhanger at the end. Because Robert Kirkman is doing single issues. Which is my favorite thing, is single issues. I'm sitting here. I do this show. We are on episode 922 of me talking about single issues. I love single issues. And these single issues are too short every time. And I mean that in the best way. Like, it's a page turner. You're ripping through it. You're looking at the really exciting images and colors and wonderful sound effects in this one, actually. I love the sound effects in this one. There's Shrack and Ram and Zap, Zap and Kroom. That's just one page. Voom, Vap, Vap, Ram, Vzak, Vzak, Vzak. That's the sound of laser bolts, I guess. A thuck. You know what a thuck is? A thuck is definitely someone getting stabbed. Thap, that's the sound of grabbing somebody by their neck. And the crack, well, you know what that means. Actually, no, it's not the neck. I thought it was, but it's the faceplate of the armor getting cracked. And then finally, explosion, which goes ba-whoosh. Boy, this is it. There should be an Eisner category for best sound effects on a comic book page. It is in the sound effect on a comic book page is a singular art form that only exists in comic books. And I think it is lovely, and I appreciate it very much. Anyway, you know, the issue, I get excited when they come out. I really like reading them, and there's always a cliffhanger. And by the time it's over, I want to know what happens next. And it's silly, you know, and I mean, in the best way. Like, it's not like, oh, this is so silly. You know, it's a very simple sort of space, you know, squishy sci-fi. I don't know if that's what it works. But it's very like, you know, cloaks and armor and space and it's really fun. And again, Robert Kirkman doesn't need to be doing this. I can't imagine that this is being developed into a show. I guess it could. But you know, he's making comics to make comics is my point. And that is, I mean, that's he does, again, he doesn't need to. He could probably just live off. I know he could live off Walking Dead comic book revenue for his life. He could live off that, not to mention the show, but he's still out here making the comics, like writing comics, putting them together. I love that. That's the coolest thing. We are wrapping up the events of the end of Krakoa, the war between the X-Men, and I can't find the issue. Here it is. An X-Men number 33, Orcus. They're on the run. We're going after them. In this story, we're off to the. So what's happened here? And it's been a problem. Is that the timing is off? Connor and I talked about this in one of the last issues. Is that it just felt like we'd missed a lot of stuff, and so every time an issue in that comes out, it feels like we missed something that happened, or maybe an issue comes out and you feel like you've jumped forward or back. And that's a little bit what's happening here. It feels like they've been turning the tide. The X-Men, the mutants, the good guys have been turning the tide on this for a while. Like, this time we're really going to take out Orcus and we're on our way. Like, every issue ends with sort of that slow motion walk towards the camera from a movie trailer. That said, a lot of fun scenes in this. Oh, God, it's going to be rough. I was just thinking about explaining X-Men stuff, and I'm not going to be good at it, but here we go. Sebastian Shaw, who I know because of the Dark Phoenix saga, that's where I met him, is one of those comic book villains who is always going to come out on top, has no morality, just, you know, wants to be existent and rich and powerful. And so, like, they're waging, like, well, the Shaws are, he doesn't really care who wins, Orcus, Mutinums, whatever. They need to be standing tall at the end of it. So they buy some property on the shores of Madripoor, on the dock area, and then hire Reavers. Reavers are the mutants. I don't know if they're mutants, but they have, like, gun arm hands. They're amoral. They blow things up. They go and blow up the bar where Callista... If you're like an X-Men fan and you've listened to this show for a really long time, I hope that this is entertaining to you. Where Callista is, and then the X-Men show up to fight off the Reavers, and Shadow Cat, who is Kitty Pryde, continues to badassify all over the place. And I don't know, there's a lot of like switching rivalries and allegiances that happen here that you might not necessarily expect. It's kind of wacky. I feel like this is what X-Men is supposed to have been for a while. And it wasn't until the Hellfire Gala, Fall of the Mutants, whatever they call it. I think that's a different story that Jerry Duggan has been doing. Yet it's worked for me for the longest time in a while. And I'm kind of going to be sad when it's over. That said, I think it's about time for this sort of be over and we move on to the next thing. Cause they've been in this sort of end game phase. And then finally we bring in the mutants that we met in that great scene with Dr. Doom, and then all the mutants are getting along together. And we get to see these characters who were supposed to be enemies, be friends with each other. And there's wacky mutants everywhere. And then we're back to Nimrod and he's very scary. And of course it was all a different plan all along. We have to get back and they're going to take over for the moon or whatever it is. I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I can't even explain. I don't know who Callista is. She's got a creepy eye thing. I don't like that, but it was cool in here and I dug it. Oh, it takes a lot to just keep talking and talking, but here we are. I'll keep this short. Patreon.com/iFanboys, where listeners can go to directly support the show, unlock shows for everybody. You could be part of a great community on Discord or Facebook, and there's the monthly patron hangout. You can vote on the patron book of the week. You can get a patron power at the $5 or higher level. There is tier exclusive merch when you sign up. There is an ad-free feed of this show at $10 or higher level. The people who do this, you do not have to. You do not have to feel guilty about it. But if you are able and you want to contribute and you want to help support us do this thing, you are, everybody who listened is incredibly appreciated. But there's a little extra for people who want to, like, you know, put the cash on the barrel head and say, we support this show, you know, us, any show, whatever, means the world. Means, you know, because what we're doing matters to you, and it helps us, actually. It helps us out a ton. And so thank you for that. That's how you can get involved with it if you haven't. iFanBarthWithus.com. There are 13 designs you can put on t-shirts and items and things like that. Go there and check it out. Hopefully there's something you like and you can grab one of those things. If you are like, I want to support the show, I don't want to deal with any of those things, there's a PayPal link at iFanBar.com/support. You can do that. And then probably the easiest thing, if you use Amazon, would be to go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, and you can just find a way to click through that affiliate account. So the things that you buy through there can come to us. And I know that there are other people who use an affiliate link like that, but I'm going to tell you, don't use that one. Use this one. I'm a very nice person and I think I deserve it. Yeah, it's true. There's bookshop.org. It is an aggregate of local bookstores that you can use too. Buy your books from local bookstores instead of that other companies, which may or may not have been named. And where there are links for that, it will be on the site, especially the Booksplodes, etc. But thank you for all of that. If you have contributed, if you still contribute, if you had to, if you did anything, thank you very much. If you're like, dude, I can't handle it, or you know, it's not a priority, fair enough. Thank you to everybody. Thank you for listening. All those things. Thank you. I appreciate is what I'm saying. I have gratitude. Captain America number 758, or as I believe it is here, a much lower number. I want to say 7 or 8. I don't know. I'm going to look it up. The point is this. This is a bad comic book. And I was picking it up, and I was like, oh, so last week or last month it came out, which feels is number 8, by the way. I said, this is a terrible comic book. It was one of the worst comic books I've read in a really long time, after sort of being hit or miss on the first arc from J. Michael Straczynski. I don't know what this is. It's terrible. And I almost dropped. I was like, you really hated it. You know what? Give him one more chance. Get in and see this Cap. And it's bad. It's bad in a lot of ways. I mean, it just, it feels wrong. I don't really know who the people are, what the stakes are. He's fighting. There's like a couple of good concepts in here, but he's got a crystal shield. And if he looks like they killed his arm, like he look, you have, there's a bad guy and he's like such a weird demon or whatever that a mortal cannot look upon him. And so Steve gives him a little glance. Instead of looking through his crystal shield, he looks at him straight on and it makes his hand dead. And I was like, oh no, they're going to Alfred this guy. They're going to Alfred his hand. But then they fix it at the end. I don't know who, I don't know. It's bad. It was bad. I think I'm out. I don't really want to read the next. There's a very good chance I'll pick it up and read it. I don't know. I don't really do hate reading, but it's pretty close, I think. And that's kind of where he is. And you might be wondering, guys, you might be thinking, well, wait, what did Connor think of it?
Captain America 758? No. No, 1,000 times no.
That's exactly correct. That is absolutely the right thing. Let's move over to Crave number 5 from Image Comics. It seems to be fully done by Maria Lovett. Although there's two L's, so it could be Yovit. I don't know if it works that way. But this is the story of an app, a mobile application, which uses some sort of insidious AI to help people achieve what they crave, which is a bunch of college kids in this. So it's mostly sex. Although I don't think you need to be a college kid to mostly crave sex. Although you have more energy for it at that point. In my not strengthening memory, I'm losing the thread. Is the thing that's happening here? There's a program. They have to like put a USB stick in the server to stop it, so that people aren't killed. And the people who run the college, or you know, they thought they were just doing a safe project, and I can't tell if the app is like sentient and trying to protect itself. There is a nice little sequence of events that sort of causes the thing that makes the fire at the end. And you can kind of tell that they're building up little story pieces throughout this whole thing. So the structure is pretty good, but also felt a little transparent to me. I don't know who this creator is. I've never seen the name. I think it was very strong out of the gate, but it's kind of easy to be strong out of the gate when you have a pretty good concept. And a pretty good concept is not the exact same thing as a pretty good story. And it's, you know, it's sexy. There's a lot of fucking, just tons of fucking at the beginning of the book. And you know, there's something attractive about that. But as we've gone on, like I don't really know the characters apart from one another. I know that there's a couple of couples that have formed, and it seems like they're both like super nerd dudes with super hot chicks. That's kind of what it seems like. And I don't know. I've kind of lost the thread. I'm gonna finish it off. I don't know how many issues it is. It doesn't say, but. Like it's pretty good, but the story shows signs of novicism, I think, is what I would say. Like it's not quite baked. But I'm enjoying reading it. There are good ideas in here. It's not quite fully baked. And so you're wondering, what about Connor?
Crave number 5? Yeah. Okay.
Now, you may remember he was a big booster of this, and so you've heard, you hear in that a little bit of down. Like, he's down with it. He wants to like it because he really liked it a lot, more than I did probably. But yeah, we're losing it just a little bit here. Let's move along to your string of Jeff Johns. Just Jeff Johns, Jeff Johns, Jeff Johns. That was really satisfying to say for some reason. I can't fully explain. First up, Geiger number 1. I feel like I've read multiple Geiger stories And I guess this is Geiger number one, but maybe the other one had a different sort of title or whatever. The man loses his family. They're in the shelter, they're in the bunker, and he is radiated to the point where he's a nuclear man walking around, and he controls himself with an inanimate carbon rod. Simpsons joke. And he can, if he pulls the inanimate carbon rod out, then he lets loose all the energy in his system, and he just cooks anybody around, you know, like Jack of Hearts in that She-Hulk book. Actually, you know what? This is a perfect, I'm not talking about She-Hulk, but what did Connor think of it?
The sensational She-Hulk 185? Yes. Yes, 1,000 times yes.
He really liked it. This is going to screw up the rundown for the show notes, but I don't care. I just did. I put it in the middle of it. I like this character. I like this book, and I think that we've been sort of, I don't know, like, it's weird that it's a number one. This is the ongoing series for this character, and I'm ready to get on with it. I feel like we've been introduced to this guy and his sadness. He sort of wanders around in a destroyed world and everything's terrible, and he lost his family, and he's kind of thinks he's a monster and blah, blah, blah. This one has a guy who, and these may have all been introduced in all those Zero issues and the specials and whatever. It's hard to keep track of. They've created an entire universe for this new imprint that they're calling a publisher, but it's an imprint, which is what? The Ghost Machine. And there's this guy who's like a schlubby sort of middle-aged guy in a knight outfit. And basically he was a thug. He was one of the sort of worked for the bad guys, just a henchman. And he decided, and everything he did was terrible. He decided he wanted to be a good guy. So he hears about, you know, the Geiger, the radioactive man or whatever he is, the glowing man. And he wants to be like him. So he starts following him around, you know, and then Geiger's eventually like, all right, fine, you can come with me because, you know, it's we're on the road together. You know, it's an odd couple kind of thing. You want to see Geiger find happiness, although you know he never will. He's the reluctant hero. The other guy's kind of a schlub. And he has he has an Excalibur type of sword, and he has there's a really good scene in here where Geiger says, "You can come with me." And so he, I don't know if his name's Geiger. That's true. I have no idea if his name is actually Geiger, but that's what I'm calling him because it's the name of the book, and that's not my fault. I believe his name is Tariq, but that's neither here nor there. Anyway, the night guy tries to fall on his sword, and what I think is a beautifully drawn sequence of panels. And that's when Geiger saves him and says, "All right, you can come with me. Stop trying to kill yourself." The story here, though, is that Gary Frank is doing beautiful work. And the last series I can remember him doing sort of regularly was whatever the Watchmen book was that he did with Jeff Johns, where really he just sort of, it's hard to say he leveled up because he's been around forever and he's been excellent, but man, I am loving what he's doing in this book. And I put my finger on something about it, is that it really, the art really reminds me of Steve Dillon on Preacher. I mean, Steve Dillon is Steve Dillon, but on Preacher specifically, the way that if you have this book in front of you, you look at the panels, they're not perfectly squared off. They're like hand drawn. They're kind of imperfect, and that's how Preacher was drawn. And then there is a shading and a way that the faces are, and just there's, it really reminds me of Steve Dillon on Preacher. It's more polished, but not really. It's hard to explain it. It just feels a little more professional, whereas Steve Dillon sort of felt more edgy to me, but they're really sharing. Like, Steve Dillon could do it more polished. It's this, he went minimal. So this was like, if you look at the first chunk of issues from Preacher, like, he was really going for it. Like, I'm going to do the best work of my career. Maybe it was stuff like people did when they were younger artists and they find a way to sort of do more with less. But this is like that, but maybe even a little more fleshed out because Gary Frank is a fine artist and is really putting everything into each of these pages. But there was a connection here that I saw for maybe the first time, and I really liked it. This is definitely more realistic than a Steve Dillon, but if you're looking at it and you don't see it, I don't know what to tell you. Moving over. Oh, wait, hold on. I can't believe I almost missed this.
Geiger number one? Yes.
Okay, that was pretty clear. I feel the same way. I say yes. Rook Exodus also from Ghost Machine. There was a special that sort of previewed all these things sometime in the last few months. This one is a very different story. If this is related to the story in Geiger, it's very far away because Rook Exodus takes place on some faraway planet that an evil corporation, or at least a soulless corporation, took people to, and they terraformed it, and the people stayed there, and there was a world engine, and the world engine broke down, and so they evacuated the planet, and there's only a few people left, and everybody who's left on it is going to die because there's not going to be any water or air or anything very soon. Once the engine dies, nothing else works, but there's all these guys who are wardens, and what that means is, I'm not sure, but they have helmets that let them talk to different animals and help control them, like Aquaman is to fish. So the guy, Rook, he talks to birds. They're mostly crows. Bring it back to our pick of the week, Yusuke Yojimbo the Crow. And in the sort of preview mini story issue that we read, neither Connor nor myself liked it, this one very much. It was very different than the rest of them. This one is written by Jeff Johns with Jason Fabok. Connor says Fabok. I don't think that's right. These are all the artists. Like, Jeff Johns has artists that he's been working with forever, and he brought them all into this new studio, and I hope that he's paying them well and they're all getting their money, because then they get to do the stories that they want to, and it's pretty cool. Fabok is perfect for this kind of story, actually. It's sci-fi dystopia with animals. Anyway, I don't know that I loved this, but I actually did like it a heck of a lot more than I expected to. I almost didn't read it. But there is a nice story in here about, like, a guy who wants to get off the world, but you're not sure that he really has anything to live for. And he's got his friend here who is a pig guy. He's got pigs. This guy has crows. And the pig guy's like, screw it, I'm staying here. I love this place. My pigs need me. And he's trying to convince his friend, like, no, you have to leave. You're going to die. And then some stuff happens, and then there's a bear guy. That's as much spoiler as I'm going to give you. For a story that I'm not really that interested in, that doesn't feel like what I want to read, I did think it was pretty well done. And I got through this issue, and I was totally into the story, you know, through the whole thing. And I'm going to read the next one. I don't love it, but it's better than I expected. So I am a little curious to see where it goes. Fantastic boars versus giant bear fight double page spread up in this one. It's very, like, comic booky video game, you know, Limp Bizkit soundtrack kind of deal. But it's somewhat satisfying. I'm not gonna, Connor didn't read that. I don't have a thing for that. But I do have to go through the other ones that he had here, because I didn't read all these, or I didn't choose to talk about them, but we're going to go through it. It's okay. So let's see what we got.
The Avengers 778. I mean, I guess.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Connor. How about this?
Birds of Prey 8. Yes.
I agree. I've been enjoying Birds of Prey quite a bit. Let's see what we got.
Doctor Strange 440. Sure.
I'm pretty with him on that one. That's a sure. Yeah.
Love Everlasting 14. Yes.
Yes. Maybe wrap it up soon.
The Sacrificers number 7. I don't know.
I like The Sacrificers a great deal. He hasn't. This is not surprising. Yeah, so those are Connor's reports. I made him do some work on the, if he's not going to be here, he's going to help me a little bit. Well, I had to convert those files, and then I had to figure out a system to do this and edit them in. So it may have been more work, but I mean, hopefully you enjoyed it. Those are the books that I wanted to talk about this week. But there's patrons. And if you donated at, I think it's a $5 higher level, or maybe any patron can do it. I should know this, but the fact is, here's what you're going to have to do. This is my tricky marketing thing. You're going to have to go to patreon.com/ifanboy to find out at what level you can vote on them. Patron pick. I think it's nothing. I think if you're any kind of patron, you can vote, but I don't know. I'm not the guy. I don't handle. That's not my, I'm doing it now. That's what I do. I don't know things. And even if I knew them, I'd probably forget them. That's where we're at here. The patrons voted, and the winner this week was Redcoat number one. That's right, the third Ghost Machine book in a row here, from Jeff Johns and artist Brian Hitch, with ink help by Andrew Curry. All these books have been colored by Brad Anderson and lettered by Rob Lee, who are, they're going to be on a lot of DC books that Jeff Johns had worked on before. This is the one that is the Redcoat was like the wild card of it. Like, just the premise is that it's a British soldier in his red coat, the British military, the Marines. And I assume the regular soldiers, I know the Marines had them. They had these red coats because Napoleonic and colonial fighting was stupid, and they apparently wanted to be shot. But there was manly courage. And so there you are. We learn the story of, I don't know his name, the Redcoat, we'll call him. And he basically was a soldier. He was a bastard. He broke into some sort of mystical ceremony where they were, yeah, this is hard to get. I know the words I want. This isn't, I can't remember. I start to say it. It sounds ridiculous. But basically, he's running and hiding from colonial soldiers, and he finds himself in a church. And in that same church, there's some weird mystical ceremony taking place where people that look like clan members, but with red hoods, are standing over an altar where Ben Franklin is laying down, and they're using some sort of mystical chants or whatnot to imbue Ben Franklin with everlasting life. And then this Yahoo falls in the middle of it. He gets zapped with the everlasting life. And then we find out like he's been, our story actually seems to open in 1892. And so he's been running around for over 100 years, being a bastard, doing whatever it takes to sort of get by. Can't die. If he dies, he comes back up, and he's got to scrounge his way through life and fight. And he basically says, I'm not a good guy. So I assume the story will be talking to him about, finding out if he is a good guy. It's not unlike, I guess, kind of like Skinner Sweet from the American Vampire series that Scott Snyder did. And in the end, he meets up with a kid, Albert Einstein. Yeah, that's right. He's a kid, Albert Einstein, 1892, who calls him the wizard. And then the story comes back around, and some of the people from the Ben Franklin thing show up again. And it's pretty weird. It's put together. It feels a lot like, it feels like a, almost like a 30s, 40s, 50s sort of adventure comic, like with a high concept. It's almost serial adventure-y. And you know, like, here's this historical figure. And the thing is I really like this American history of the colonial era through the, you know, sort of the Gilded Age. That's my jam. I enjoy those things a great deal. And so it's really interesting to me to read this stuff coming in and out. I don't really like the character that much, but I don't know that you're supposed to. And when you have a series that has an anti-hero, you know, it can really go either way. Sometimes it's brilliant. Sometimes you get a Tony Soprano or Walter White. But even Walter White, I actually had a hard time with because I don't like him. I don't want him to succeed. And I don't know. So this character, I don't know. We're gonna find out what his deal is. It's a pretty good setup in that it is completely wacky batshit. And I do love that. A cranky Ben Franklin who wants to live forever. By the way, we'd all have been better off if he lived longer. I just want to point that out. Unless he was super into the occult, maybe he was a piece of shit. I don't know, but he's one of my favorite founding fathers. So there. He made fur hats popular. I mean, among many other things, but fur hats were gigantic in Europe because of this one guy, and I think that is fascinating. Brian Hitch on art. It's good Brian Hitch. It kind of – you wouldn't think that this would be the book that you'd want to put him on because it's very on the ground. But there's a lot of sort of fist, you know, hand-to-hand fighting, but there's no – you know, gigantic. This is a guy I know because he drew, you know, spaceships that were size of cities and armies of super soldiers flying across. And this is just, you know, dudes on the ground. Here's the thing, though. Here's what bothers me about this guy, the red coat guy. It's 1892. He's still wearing the red coat. He's in America. You can't. That just seems like a bad idea. And if he's trying to not be discovered, whatever, he's always wearing the red. He's not, this is Hobgadling, actually, for those of you who read Sandman. It's sort of that deal. That was a much better story. But it's a Hobgadling situation, except he's always wearing the red coat. And I get it. He's called Red Coat or whatever, but it just seems dangerous to be wearing that around. It'd be like, you know, it'd be like wearing a gray Civil War uniform, you know, or in Boston in the 1870s. I don't know how you get away with it. Geoff Johns is a super, super smart dude. And I think that they're going to address it. But it made me go, what are you wearing that for? Because that seems like a bad idea. Like, you'd stand out, and he's like a scoundrel. So you would think he wouldn't want to stand out. Everybody knows about red coats. It's not like the normal person walking around wouldn't recognize that as a thing that'd be weird to wear. But it is, and he does it. He even looks like Skinner Sweet now that I think about it. All right. So then I got to do two things. I got to give ratings, and I got to say, if I'm sticking with it, that's how it goes. So my rating is, it's a grudging 3.5. It could be a 3, but I'm going 3.5. It's being done at a high level of skill. It did just enough to hook me into wanting to know more on a concept that's loose. I will read the next issue. I will stick with it. And let's see what our correspondent has said.
Red coat number one. Yes, maybe.
Okay. And also, he checked in. He's going to give it a 3.25. And yes, sticking with it. Or sure, which is a little more reluctant. Sure. Okay. Sure. So that's all the comic books. Thank you for voting on the patron pick this week. Every week, a patron who has supported us at the $5 or higher level at patreon.com/ifanboy gets their own custom superpower. Tom Mikulski has the power to control hiccups in other people. He can relieve your hiccups. He can give you hiccups. He can increase the severity of those hiccups. He can decrease the severity of those hiccups. He might be the only person who understands what a hiccup is. I feel like there's still, like, it's one of those things, like, scientists look at a platypus and they go, they throw their hands up. I feel like hiccups are like that a little bit. I know that every time I eat bread, I get hiccups. Like, if I have like a hunk of, not like Wonder Bread or whatever, but if I had like a piece of bread, like a baguette or something, I take a bite or something and I start getting hiccups. And it's the weirdest thing. And my wife thinks I'm a lunatic, but I've looked it up. This happens with other people. My kid gets hiccups like nobody's business, and they'll just stick around forever. He can help you out. And if you ever saw that, I said The Simpsons before, but if you ever saw that Simpsons, the kill me, great joke. That feels like a Conan joke. I don't know. Sometimes I listen to those ones and I go, I bet Conan wrote that. This is not true. I don't know who wrote that. but Tom Mikulski can control hiccups. And I got to say, if you were going for an enemy, if you had to like stick it to your enemy, give him a rough case of hiccups that just will not go away. That's some slow water drip torture, I think, over time. I think you would be begging to be killed. But he can use it for good also. So take that as you will. Hey, we're rounding the horn here. We're getting near the end of this thing, and I haven't even taken a drink yet. Last time I did this, I was yawning constantly. I had to like edit them all out. I only did that once here, and you didn't hear it because that's what kind of a show producer that I am. Now, this came in, and he says it's not a show question, so I'm not going to read his name, but I thought it was actually interesting. So this guy, who is in Canada, I'm going to tell you that much. There's other identifying information here, but I'm not going to give you his name. This is not a show question. It is more of a midlife crisis question from someone who always wanted to work creatively in comics, but as often happens, life gets in the way. I am currently an aging teacher of a junior high class, about the same age as you guys, me. I don't know if you're out there listening, we're probably many ages, but middle-aged, we'll say. I am always telling my students to find and follow their passions. Every time I do it, it eats away at my creative soul. Where was this advice when I was growing up? Currently, I am in a push to make something happen, to make anything happen. In some ways, it has never been easier to get a comic out there, but at the same time, it has never been harder to get someone to actually take the time to read or consider creative work. After a full day of teaching, I push to create, but I am feeling my age. I literally hurt my back last week by sitting and drawing. Is it ever too late? Question, this one's directed at me. Do you still write? Is there a 12-step program for someone who is worried that it may be time to quit the self-destructive activity of trying to get their work out there? Okay, this is a lot. This is a lot. Midlife crisis question, absolutely, 100%. Is it too late to have made the creative impact on the world that I would like to have done? I think is sort of where this is going. Right. So here's my deal. It was, do you still write? People who were listening to this show through the sort of early part of the show and in through about the 2010-ish, 10-11, I was working pretty regularly trying to get comics made, trying to get work writing comics. I came up with a bunch of concepts. I had artists and friends I know work on things with me, had pitches out there. Nothing really took hold. And my son was born, in 2010, and, I wrote a novel in, I think, 2009. I made it available in 10 or 11 or something like that. Like, I was identifying myself as a writer, person. And then, to a certain extent, it kind of went away. And then part of that was, I learned out later, like, my son has special needs, and the energy that it took to just get through life and have my regular job and whatever, it just took up everything that I was, you know, that was creative in me before. Although if I look back on it now, that feels to me like a little bit of a cop out. A couple of things happened was that, and I'd also worked in Los Angeles, and I'd written scripts and stuff like that, like not to be produced, but like spec scripts and stuff, and trying to get like an agent or a job or something like that. But ultimately, I think partially because of the energy it took to raise a kid and do all the stuff. And we have a second son and all of it. And I had a real job and dogs and whatever. And then the website, like all this stuff. Like I lost interest to a certain extent. Or at least I realized that, like, all right, so what does it mean? Like, the next step is maybe getting a comic published at Image or a small publisher. And then I'm going to go to conventions, you know, regularly during the summer and travel around and try to hawk my book. And I knew so many people who did that and were stuck in that middle area. And, you know, then you sort of scrounge around getting work, and I just didn't want it. I didn't want that. It wasn't going to give me what I want. I mean, like at the end of the day, like, I think I'm a pretty good writer. I think I have the talent. I don't think that I have the aptitude. I've said that. And like, you have to think about what it is that you want. Are you driven to create stories? Because if you are driven to create stories, nothing can stop you from doing that. And I've met too many people, and I've talked to too many people who are driven to keep making comics. And it has very little to do with if anybody else is going to recognize them for it. And a lot more to do with, they would like people to recognize them for it so that they can make a living doing this thing, which is often the only thing that they care about. I care about a lot of things. I like to do a lot of different things. And my interests change and flit. I love comics. I still do. I always have. I love the craft of comics. I learned a ton doing it. Getting my name printed as a writer of a Marvel comic, I'm not that guy. I thought I could be at one point, but I'm not. There's all sorts of reasons. But ultimately, I wasn't single-minded enough. And I think to get somewhere, whether you have to be single-minded, that has to be the most important thing to you. And it wasn't. I loved it. I loved making comics. It was hard. It's so hard to make comics. And I'm just talking about this as a writer. There's all sorts of things. So, you know, as an artist, being tired, whatever, all right, here's your tough talk. If you're already middle-aged, life gets in the way, whatever, you've had lots of chances to make comics. You have. We just did, what was that the Barbarian book that we were talking about. You'd have to look it up at the last couple of shows. The guy did sort of the Conan book, and he took 10 years to do like the first story and then threw it all away and did like 4 issues, and they all came out, and it's like, I achieved my goal. And it was really fun. It just came out from Image Comics over the last year. And I'm sorry, I can't remember, and I can't have somebody look it up because I'm still talking. He did it. You know, you want to make your comics, but other things got in the way. And I've said that sentence, but really you prioritized other things. But this is the king, is there's nothing wrong with that. You had to make choices for your life. And when you make a choice about something you're going to do in your life, it's going to take up space that something else isn't going to be able to fill. If you wanted to do it so badly and have that hunger, you would have done it. I think the good news is you're tired, you're whatever, your back hurts. Dude, I hear you. I understand it. But then do a little bit at a time. Like come up with a framework and then work on it from there. Like, and keep it small. I used to tell people this all the time when we did the Make Comics podcast. People would be like, oh, I want to do a story, and they have this idea for a giant graphic novel. Like, do 5 pages, do 3 pages, do a 1-page comic. Figure out something you want to do, focus in it, and do that at a small level. Just to do something. If it's that you just want to make things, cool. If you want to make things and have people paying attention to them, that's harder. That's a different thing. Making things is one thing. Putting things out there and trying to get people to recognize it or read it or buy it is a whole other thing. That's a tough skill set that I don't really have. And maybe you do, maybe you don't or whatever. Basically, you're going to have to give something up. And sometimes it's hard. But at the end of the day, like, it's okay. Like, I felt guilty. I feel guilty because I did comics with people. Like, I have pages on my wall that friends of mine worked together with me on, and I feel bad because I let them down. I made them work on something. You know, I had four pages with Gabriel Hardman, and another 4 pages with Declan Shalvey, and these like amazing professionals took their time out for a story that nobody ever saw. And I feel really good. I talked to Gabriel about it, and he's like, it's fine. I wanted to do it. He drew the thing. It was awesome, but I had nowhere to put it. You didn't do anything wrong though. Guy in Canada, teacher. Like, if you want to do those things, do them. If you don't get to them, it's because you couldn't fit it in or whatever. It's not going to do you any good feeling guilty about it that you should, or I'm running out of time or whatever. If it's important to you, then do it. Just find, do something. Do anything. If that makes you feel creatively fulfilled, you don't need to prove it to anybody else. You need to prove it to yourself. It's incredibly, you said, like, it's never been easier to put a comic book out there. It's harder than ever to get attention. That's correct. It just is. That's the state. You know, the state that it is, you know, and you can look up stories. You're like, oh, so-and-so didn't get their book published until they were 40, or this actor didn't start until they were almost 50 or whatever. And it's like, that does happen, but it's not likely. So I think if I'm you, I'm going to look into figuring out what it is you really, really, really do want. Do you want approval? Like, you talking about getting your work out there, getting people to see your work. Do you want people to tell you you're really good at it? Do you want to be validated by that? Or do you want to tell stories and you have to get them out of your head and your hand? I suspect that, like me, it's somewhat the latter. Like, you want to be validated. You want to have been someone. I'm talking to myself here, by the way. I hope I'm not going like super hard on you. I got to say, way back when I went to San Diego Comic-Con, this would have been 2000, first time I ever went. And I went and saw a panel with J. Michael Straczynski. And he said what I'm saying now. And I hated it. I hated what he was saying. And I was like, all these excuses. Now I'm older. Don't really like his work all that much. But he's right. If I wanted to do it, I would have done it. I wasn't that driven. Or I lost, you know, the steam, or did whatever. And it's okay. Like, I choose to ride my bike or to go skiing or to play music instead. Listen, I got Logic so I could record music and be in a band or whatever. Pandemic really sidetracked me or whatever. But like, I don't finish things. I don't have that part. I would love to play in a band, but I'm not going to be the guy leading it. I don't have the bandwidth or the passion, the drive or whatever. And it's gotta be okay. Cause otherwise I'm going to walk around feeling shitty about myself all the time. Like, I didn't accomplish anything. And that's, you know, that's not, That's not fair either. So like whatever your situation is, and I hope that this, I hope this isn't just me railing and anybody else there who has creative, you know, inclinations, you know, this is helpful or not, but like, think about what it is you actually want. What is your goal? You know, and then work towards that or decide maybe that's not, you know, maybe that's not for me. Maybe that's not what I want. But if you want to make stuff, make stuff. If you can draw, there's nothing stopping you from making a comic other than you're doing other stuff instead of it. You know, a little bit at a time, figure it out, figure out some way to make it work, but you're doing it for yourself. You know, like you have to be doing it for yourself. Not because, you know, it'll impress people or you want, a lot of me, I think, wanted to be validated, wanted to be told I am good enough to do this a lot more than I wanted to do it. And there's the, you know, there's the saying like, having written is much easier than actually writing, you know, and actually writing is hard. Writing is very hard for me. I love the feeling of having written, but the actual sort of doing it was like pulling teeth. And it, apparently it was so much like pulling teeth that it wasn't worth still going. Now, if my life had gone differently, maybe things would go differently. Sure. But it didn't. And I can't control that. So whatever. I want to mention this really quickly because it made me think of it. Ed Piskor was a cartoonist. He I can tell he ended his own life. There was a thing on the internet had said that he had there was sexual misconduct or he treated some women badly and the entire industry turned against him. And he put up one of the saddest letters ever and, you know, basically said goodbye and arranged all these things. And then, he was confirmed that they found him, passed away. And, I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened with him and these people. I do know that, I knew him. I met him, from very early on. You want to talk about a person who was 100% devoted to making comics. I mean, this guy couldn't not do it. You know, he did a book called WYSIWYG forever ago that he was really pushing hard on us. Eventually he goes and he does the Hip Hop Family Tree books, which are stellar. And so what I will say is that I don't know that I know of a lot of other people who were so driven to make comic books and that's all that was important to them, but he certainly seemed like that kind of guy. And, you know, his work not being in the world is a real bummer to me. And I, you know, I hope that people weren't terribly hurt by him. I hope that what I say doesn't hurt people or whatever. But I will say, like, as a sort of person who loved comic books, I can tell you he was that. He absolutely was. And it's a shame. Just all of it's a big shame in that way. So, I didn't plan to do that. It's kind of a bummer, but it is a bummer. What are you going to do? Canadian teacher man, I wish you the best. Don't feel bad about yourself. Do what you can. Do what it is to make you happy. Be honest with yourself. All that stuff. You can write to us at contact@iFanboy. If you want to write in a Mediasplode question, write Mediasplode in the subject line. That's our non-comics monthly show that we do here. I'll run through this quickly. Last week, there was a Booksplode that Connor and I did on Homicide, the graphic novel, parts one and pretty much part two. Prior to that was a Talksplode with Rob Williams. Great conversation about writing and storytelling and making comics in there. I always say this, but like every one of those conversations is fantastic. And they all further convinced me like I love the mechanics of it and everything. And like, but I don't have whatever that doggedness is to do that. Cause I was like, oh, I could do something else. Like learn to play drums instead. And I get that same creative thrill, whatever it is, or you know, like this show helps. If I didn't have this show, who knows, but I do. In April, there'll be a Talksplode, another one. There'll be a Mediasplode where we're going to be talking about Dune Part 2 and the television challenge where we report on the programs that we were assigned. There'll be an Animation Brain Trust show. Yeah, Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 2. Also, as a note, if you listen to this on Google Podcasts, and many of you do, is shutting down this week. And if you use it, you should switch to YouTube Music or Pocket Casts, or I guess you could use any of the other ways. But if you're using Google Podcasts, you're going to not see this show anymore. And you're like, where is it? I'm telling you right now, figure out a different way to listen to it if you want to continue listening. And I certainly hope you do. You can find our library of over 1,300, I think almost 1,400 shows over at iFanboy.com, wherever podcasts are sold. You can follow us at iFanboy Comics on Instagram to find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. Connor will often do Best of the Week in panels. He and I are on Instagram at CS Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. You can go to youtube.com/iFanboy. We will find all of our old video shows. We post every week there. This show, there's all the video shows. It's interesting. There's an earthquake in the Northeast, in New York City specifically, on Friday. And someone told me that. I was like, oh, yeah. There was an earthquake when we were filming the iFanboy show at one point. I don't know which episode it is. Somebody out there might. But like, it's on camera. And it, like, we're about to do it. And like, is that an earthquake? I think we put it in like the end credits tag. But that was the last time there was one there. It was very, very minor. Very minor. If you like the show, consider writing a review or leaving a star rating or whatever it is you can do on any of the places that you listen to or consume podcasts. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this. Whenever I do these solo shows, I'm always like, well, that was garbage. And then afterwards, people say very nice things to me. So I'm going to assume that those are sincere things. And I hope that this isn't the one that you're like, okay, that was one time too many. I hope it was useful. I totally feel like I'm flailing around the entire time. If there's any justice in the world, you won't have to hear me do this in a while because it's exhausting and I would miss talking to my friends. I am Josh. I will see you next week. Stay safe out there. Stay happy. Do the things that make you happy. Check on people. Tell the people that you're close to you, that they're important to you and that you love them, and hug each other and enjoy art and enjoy making art, and do not beat yourself up for the things that you didn't accomplish. It's just there's too much. I care about you. I care.